720 WGN, it's the Wintrust Business Lunch, and a happy Saturday afternoon on this quintessential January day. Cloudy in the 30s. I don't know if Bob mentioned sunshine in the near future, but I sure hope it is coming soon. It's been one of the cloudiest Januaries, and that will continue today. But I guess it's not snowing and no ice on the roads or anything like that, so not so bad for January. Amy Guth is off for this shift, but she will be back on tonight at 7. She's just taken this shift off here for the Wintrust Business Lunch. My name is John Hansen, filling in for her. You can follow me on Twitter at John, J-O-N, the Cubs fan, or follow me on Facebook at John, J-O-N, Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, and I'd love for you to join the conversation at any point. We're going to be talking about a lot of fun stuff today. Bob mentioned the bag tax that's coming to Chicago in just a couple days here, applying to both plastic and paper bags, which is something that a lot of people didn't quite know about. Patty Wetley from DNA Info is going to be joining us. And also, as January wraps up, as we start to continue to make those goals and keep those goals for 2017, Lori Berry from UBS is going to keep our financial house in order with five tips here that we can do, even though that it's already almost February, to get 2017 off to a great start. But we're going to start talking about Super Bowl ads. And we're joined by the creative editor of Adweek, Tim Nunn. Tim, thank you so much for joining me on this Saturday.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Tim, I got to say that the game of Super Bowl ads has changed so quickly, so fast, so quickly, and so drastically. You know, it used to be an event that we'd all gather around the TV, not only to watch the game, but so many people tuning in to watch those commercials. And boy, I mean, that's still the case somewhat, but it has changed, and it has changed quickly.
It has. I mean, the biggest change is that so many of the ads are pre-released now. They come out, you know, a week or even sometimes 2 weeks before the game. And, you know, this really started about 5 years ago. I think it was 2011 when Volkswagen had the famous Little Vader commercial. I'm sure you remember that one. I think they released that on the Wednesday before the Super Bowl. And this was very rare at that point to release your commercial early. The whole point was to kind of surprise people on the day of the game. But, you know, before the game even started that year, this commercial had, you know, however many millions of hits on YouTube. And the advertisers realized, what are we doing? Why aren't we sort of hyping our own commercials? So what you have these days, you have a lot of ads out early. You have a lot of teasers, you know, which is hilarious, like an ad teasing another ad.
I mean, right. 4 seconds for a 15-second ad.
Exactly. So most of the advertisers now, a solid majority do this. They pre-release their commercials. So if you're the kind of person who wants to have a surprise on the game, you got to sort of, you know, not be online too much in the week leading up to it.
Is this a way to straddle the audiences in a way that to get maybe younger millennials who may not watch the game or just consume media differently, but also still have that spot in the game because it is still worth something to have all those eyeballs watching it?
Well, sure, it is. I mean, it's so many people are on social media now, and, you know, getting an ad to go viral online is just as important as getting it on the game. You know, you've got about 100 million plus viewers on the game, so that's the focus. But it's also, you could get as, you know, you could get 60, 70 million views online, which is what that Volkswagen ad did. You're sort of doubling your exposure. So, yeah, I mean, with so many people using social now, it's kind of a no-brainer to make that a big part of your media plan, too.
The phone number here, 312-981-7200. I imagine everyone's got a favorite Super Bowl commercial from years past. Feel free to give us a call or text us with that. Tim, I'm going to ask, so with the, you know, the viral stuff that happens before the Super Bowl, has it affected ad rates, or do those continue to go up for a standard 30-second for the Super Bowl?
You know, the ad rates have stayed pretty much the same this year. It's a little bit up over last year. It's a little bit over 5 million for 30 seconds now. And, you know, the exposure online hasn't affected that price too much. I mean, the Super Bowl is still such a marquee event. You know, on television these days, there's not too many, too much programming that's live and that people watch, you know, as it happens and it's an event and, you know, they can't skip through the commercials. So the demand for these spots, I mean, a lot of times the ad slots are all sold out by November. So, you know, marketers are willing to pay this pretty exorbitant price for just 30 seconds of airtime. You know, and you could argue the value of these commercials too. It's there's not too much evidence that points to a sales boost for a lot of these companies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they love to get in the game. It's kind of a vanity play, to be
right.
honest with you. You know, I think a lot of these brands just love to be there, and they can justify it by saying, well, our brand awareness is up and our brand favorability is up. sales sometimes doesn't go up for a lot of these companies. So, you know, they love to get in the game because it's kind of a cool place to be, if you will.
Yeah, I would just say, I would release a video now and say, oh yeah, that's going to be our Super Bowl commercial, but then it never shows up in the Super Bowl. Just kind of save yourself from that. I mean, I guess the ad gives you that kind of legitimacy that you, that kind of justifies the virality of it, of the ad going up earlier.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, you think about some of the iconic Super Bowl advertisers. I mean, Anheuser-Busch, they'll tell you that their sponsorship of the game and their commercials in the game have been, you know, made them really a cornerstone American brand. And it's kind of hard to argue that. Even if, you know, individual commercials on the Super Bowl don't necessarily move product for them, it definitely sort of enhances their stature. And, you know, a lot of the automakers are talking that same game. You know, there's going to be a ton of automakers in this year's game. I think Audi is back, Lexus, Honda, Buick, Kia. I mean, there's so many of them. And, you know, I haven't spoken to too many of them over the years who have said, wow, like this really just sales shot through the roof for us this year because of the Super Bowl ad. But, you know, they like to be on there because they just feel like it's such an American thing to do. And it gives them such goodwill, I think, among the viewers. And it becomes this kind of funny. I mean, I'm sure, you know, you've seen so many Super Bowl ads over the years. It becomes this, you know, popularity contest, like who can make the funniest ad, the most memorable ad. It's almost like a creative showcase rather than a real hard product sell, too.
Tim Nudd is the creative director of Adweek. You can follow him on Twitter at Nudd, N-U-D-D, which is fascinating. Were you just the first Nudd on Twitter, Tim?
Well, there's not too many Nudds in the world, so yeah, I managed to grab that before anyone else.
That's great. You don't mind sticking around a little bit. I want to talk about some of the big companies that are skipping the Super Bowl that you've written about at Adweek, and then some that are sticking around but are doing things a little bit differently. You don't mind sticking through the break, do you?
Sure, not at all.
All right, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. We'll be back right after this. Happy Saturday, everyone. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hansen filling in for Amy Guth on this cloudy Saturday afternoon, a pretty consistent theme that we've had going here for the last, probably the whole last month of January. Give us a call, 312-981-7200, or send us a text. We're talking about Super Bowl commercials and how the game has really changed, and we're joined by Tim Nudd, the creative editor of Adweek. Follow him on Twitter, at Nudd, N-U-D-D. And Tim, you know, we talked about how a lot of, you know, these ads are still sold out by November, and the ad rate hasn't gone down, but there are some advertisers who have chosen this year to get out of the game. And the one I'm maybe most surprised of was the Wiener Stampede from last year. The Dachshund Film Super Bowl commercial was one of the favorites, and Heinz is skipping it this year.
They are skipping it. You know, I spoke to Heinz about this this past week, and, you know, I think the commercial was fantastic last year. The Wiener Stampede, as you mentioned, it was that hilarious ad with the dachshunds kind of running across the field, and I think it finished number two in the USA Today ad meter, which is, you know, pretty good gauge of the popular ads. But, you know, I think they looked at the investment there, you know, $5 million for 30 seconds, and they thought, well, maybe we'll do something different this year. So they stepped back out of the game. They're doing a separate campaign where they're actually trying to make the Monday after the Super Bowl a national holiday, which is kind of funny because so many people are, you know, stay up late partying, watching the game.
And, yeah.
I think it's one of the days of the year that productivity is pretty low at American companies. So, you know, this has been a conversation that, you know, has been suggested for years. So Heinz is kind of jumping on that bandwagon. They're not going to get nearly as, you know, the kind of attention that they got last year, of course, but they'll take that $5 million, I imagine, and do something else with it.
What?
You know, the other company I was a little surprised by is Doritos is now out after 10 years. And they had that very, very popular contest called Crash the Super Bowl, where they invited ordinary people to make Super Bowl ads, and it was very, very popular. You know, it generated a lot of goodwill for that brand, and those ads were often in the top three, or I think several of them won the ad meter, you know, a couple of different years.
Those were ones you looked forward to seeing. You were waiting for the Doritos commercial.
Right. I mean, you know, not exactly the most sophisticated humor on those, but they were really, really well received generally. And we won't be seeing those this year, so that's a bit of a change.
But they are doing something that is Super Bowl related, and it's fascinating that they're able to get this technology. It's like a not quite a breathalyzer, but something like it in a Tostitos bag, right?
That's right. So this isn't Doritos, but this is their Frito-Lay stablemate, which is Tostitos, and they created a bag where you can apparently, if you breathe on it, it can measure your blood alcohol, or actually, I think it just measures whether you've been drinking, which you should probably know that anyway.
That doesn't really tell me much.
Yeah, it does have a little bit of extra functionality where it'll actually help you call an Uber if you're at a party. If you tap your phone against it, it's got that sort of near field communication technology. So, yeah, really funky bit of packaging from Frito-Lay on that.
How much are these bags? That seems like high technology for just something you're going to throw away in the garbage.
It's a bit of a gimmick. I agree. And a few people have been emailing me this week asking where you can find those. I don't know exactly how many they made, but it'll be interesting to see if they actually work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to load up on these and give them to all my friends. So, they will be drinking. I guess it will confirm what we already know. So here's the question I have for you, Tim. So obviously, you know, Heinz and Doritos out of the game for this year, but they're still doing stuff around the Super Bowl. The NFL and the networks who spend millions of dollars for the broadcasting rights and have to make up that money somehow, I mean, they obviously are aware of what's going on. Do you have any sense of ways that they're going to try and keep businesses longer to advertise or maybe to partner on some of these grassroots efforts to expand and make sure that they keep customers for years to come?
Well, you know, I think, the NFL prefers that you buy an ad in the game, of course, because that supports the telecast. And so any other marketing activity around the Super Bowl that's not official is sort of ambush marketing is what they call it. And this happens a lot, you know, around the Olympics too. And Nike is a great example where they don't generally sponsor the Olympics as an official sponsor, but they do a lot of messaging, sports-related messaging kind of around that time. So, you know, a lot of these are kind of unsanctioned grassroots efforts. You know, the Tostitos bag, the Heinz Super Bowl Monday idea. So the NFL, you know, I think they're going to try to encourage these companies along with the broadcaster to get back in the game next year versus doing these, you know, these things around the game that don't actually have a media buy attached to them. That doesn't help the NFL or the broadcaster.
Yeah, these rogue advertisers are going to have to be using the phrase that we all hear off so often around Super Bowl Sunday, which is the big game, because they can't quite say Super Bowl as a trademark thing. So, there obviously are still people sticking in with the Super Bowl. They see a huge value in it. I find it fascinating what Snickers is doing this year.
Yes, indeed. So Snickers is one of the advertisers that we really look forward to every year also. You know, I think they've had a run of Super Bowl ads that started back in 2010 when Betty White was in their commercial. and Abe Vigoda.
Yeah, that was great.
That one. It's really funny. I mean, that was the first ad that kicked off the whole You're Not You When You're Hungry campaign, which is still going. You know, this is 7 years later. That campaign's still running. So that 2010 ad started that whole campaign. And the last couple of years, they've been really, really strong also with the Brady Bunch commercial 2 years ago. Last year, they had Willem Dafoe dressed up as Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, that's right.
Funny. But this year, they're raising the stakes, though. They're actually they're going to be broadcasting the first live commercial during the Super Bowl. And it's going to be, I believe, in the first ad slot, or at least the first ad pod of the third quarter. And it's going to star Adam Driver, who is, you know, one of Hollywood's really up-and-coming actors. He had that role on HBO's Girls, and he sort of now has become a feature film actor. He played Kylo Ren in The Force Awakens last year, or the year before. Mm-hmm. So it should be really interesting. I mean, this has never been done before. You know, they're going to be performing and broadcasting the ad live as it happens. And that'll be really, you know, worth watching. And they're going to lead into that, actually, starting, I think, this coming Thursday at noon Eastern, they're going to be starting a 36-hour live stream from the set.
Oh, wow.
And that's going to run until midnight Friday night. So a ton of content coming from Snickers, and that's going to be, you know, that's an impressive teaser. I mean, the ad itself is going to be very talk-worthy because it's live, but they're doing this 36-hour kind of teaser beforehand that's going to be pretty interesting to watch too. So
it's almost like they think they found a way to like bridge the gap between making things teasable but still setting up that must-watch quality on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you know, they've raised the stakes. I mean, they always have really, really good creative, and now what they're doing is they're doing, you know, this really, really interesting media idea, which is to have a live commercial. And, you know, live commercials are still incredibly rare. I think I don't know if you remember last February, I think it was Target and Gwen Stefani did a live commercial on the Grammys, which was really interesting. I think that was like a 4-minute video, music video that they recorded or they broadcast as it happened, which was kind of fascinating. So some advertisers have done these things over the years, but they're still very rare. And so it becomes a bit of an event also. So I think Snickers is, you know, if the ad is good, I think they're very well positioned to be one of the big brand winners on the game.
The NFL has obviously been a giant in pro sports here in America, but there's been a lot of conversation this year of ratings being down for a lot of the primetime games. I imagine there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on those ratings come the Super Bowl, because I think a lot of people still think, and the playoffs have not been that great in terms of competitive games. I imagine a lot of people will be watching to see if their big marquee event, the Super Bowl every year, takes a little bit of a dip if we see the continued thing, and if that's going to change the game in the coming years, Tim.
It could. I would be surprised if the ratings were lower than they were last year. And I think the Super Bowl is just, you know, however well the NFL does during the year, I think the Super Bowl is just its own thing. You know, it's just such an event. And, you know, you're going to have 110 million plus viewers. I'd be extremely surprised if it was less than that. So I think the you're not going to see, I think, a lot of softness in the ratings of the Super Bowl itself, even though, yeah, you're right, the NFL has struggle a little bit this year, you know, down, I think, 10% or so. So, but, you know, I think the Super Bowl is almost indestructible, honestly, as a media event.
Yeah, I think it would take something absolutely drastic to change it. And the NFL has been, well, I want to call them a nimble organization, but they obviously are paying attention to this sort of stuff, and they'll obviously be doing their best to continue to rise in popularity. All right, Tim Nudd, creative editor of Adweek. Follow him on Twitter, at Nudd, N-U-D-D. Tim, thanks so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you, John.
And you'll be watching the Super Bowl, right, I imagine? Do you sit with there like with a pen and paper? Or
I will be mostly watching the ads and not the game. We'll be scrambling in between the commercial breaks to chat about the ads. But we'll be doing a lot of live streaming on Twitter, chatting about the ads at twitter.com/Adweek. So, yeah, definitely tune in for that. It's our biggest night as well as the advertiser's biggest night.
That's great. Tim, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, John.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll get to the news here on 720 WGN. Thank you, Bob. Happy Saturday, everyone. John Hansen in for Amy Guth. Don't worry, Amy is on at 7 o'clock tonight for her usual shift. Just taking this afternoon off for the Wintrust Business Lunch. Follow me on Twitter, at John, J-O-N, the Cubs fan, or on Facebook, at John Hansen, of course. And I think a lot of people that shop in Chicago, or if you work in Chicago, you go to CVS or any of the other grocery stores out there, you've noticed in recent years a new bag that they've been trying to get rid of, the plastic bags that we just throw away, and apparently that hasn't worked. So we've got a new bag tax that is going into effect on February 1st, so we're coming up to it pretty quickly. And Patty Wetley from DNA Info joins me. We've talked recycling before. We've talked all sorts of things. This is kind of you cover the Lincoln Square neighborhood, but recycling has kind of become your unofficial beat, Patty.
Yes, it has. I mean, it's the kind of thing that plagues one neighborhood, it plagues all neighborhoods.
It does. And I think that your headline for your story that came out on DNA Info recently really kind of shocked some people, because I think people had heard about this this new tax for bags, but I think everyone thought it was just for the plastic bags, but that's not the case at all.
No, yeah, we said it's bag surprise. It's paper as well, and I've seen the comments from readers of this story, and what?
Yeah.
Exclamation seems to be a big response from people who did not realize that paper bags were affected equally with plastic, and it's not just your typical grocers and convenience stores that people think of. It's checkouts at retailers across the board. So this also affects Bloomingdale's and Neiman Marcus and J. Crew, the same as Jewel Osco, which I think was a bit of a wake-up call for a lot of folks.
Yeah, and we'll get to the retailer side of it in a second, because I imagine they've got some strong opinions on it. But I got to ask why, because I think I've always thought that paper bags were the recyclable ones. They were the good bags. You're doing fine. You know, you get your Mariano's, it's double bagged. Who cares? Double bag, and I'll use it as my recycling bag. And apparently I'm either all wrong.
John.
Well, what's so bad about the paper bags?
Well, there's a couple of issues with paper that I've actually learned about a little bit in a lot of my recycling reporting, is that, yes, paper does tend to be, you know, more quote-unquote greener than plastic, but there are certain kinds of paper, like tissues or paper towels, that because they're already made from recycled product, the fibers aren't as sturdy in them, and so they actually can't really be recycled again because what they're made of has already been used so much. But in talking with Jordan Parker from the Bring Your Own Bag Chicago Coalition, which kind of advocated for this bag tax, her point is that those paper bags, although they are recyclable, they are still being treated as disposable by consumers. So they still are only being used once. And yes, maybe a lot of people are putting them in their recycling, but a lot of people are also just trashing them after one use. So the whole point of the tax is to get people to move away from disposable bags, whether paper or plastic, as opposed to trying to just ban plastic bags. Her point was that if you're handing out a paper bag instead of plastic, you're still creating that disposable message among consumers.
Yeah, you know,
so that's what it's the heart of this issue.
I was just surprised because when we talked to Jordan, you and I both met her and with Bring Your Bag Chicago. I thought maybe she would take the opinion that she was upset about the tax only because it reintroduced plastic bags into the, you know, into the system. I mean, they're going to be around, but she wants that conversation between at the checkout lane. She wants someone to say to you, the consumer, you're going to have to pay for this bag. And that's the conversation that they want as a way to correct, quote unquote, behavior.
Right. I think that the issue, though, is who should be responsible for that conversation. And that's a little bit of the pushback that I've been getting from especially small business owners, that it should be the city driving the conversation, especially if this is something that the city really values or is promoting by passing this ordinance, placing the tax on these bags. And so I think that that's the concern that we're hearing on the consumer and the business side, is that this tax is taking effect on February 1st. Has there really been enough messaging explaining or making the case for we want to promote sustainability and reusability? But in reality, a lot of people, the only message they're hearing is yet another tax from the city of Chicago. So I think that that conversation has not really happened at the level that it should have.
I imagine, like with any big change that needs to go through, and this is, I mean, it seems like a joke, but it is a cultural change here in Chicago to do these sorts of stuff,
yeah,
recycling as general, that it does kind of take both sides really pressing at each other, the consumers changing their behavior and also the government and local officials and advocacy groups pushing that change through messaging and education.
Right. So what I'm hearing are some people are saying it's not that big a deal. People in Europe carry bags with them everywhere, but that's not necessarily, like you said, part of the culture in Chicago, where maybe with the plastic bag ban, a lot of people felt that that was a complete debacle, utter failure, because you immediately had large-scale retailers like Target who quickly found the loophole in that law. They came out with thicker plastic bags that qualified as reusable. But did we necessarily give the plastic bag ban enough time to take hold to even start to change behavior before the city just completely threw it out, scrapped it, and said, okay, now let's go with the tax on plastic and paper? And I heard from at least one small business owner that she, in looking at her bag purchases, and she uses paper bags, she had noticed that she had started ordering fewer bags because she was starting to see people bring in more reusable bags. So it could be that a shift was starting to take and the plastic bag ban was starting to work, but it just got thrown out too quickly.
Patty, I got to admit something. So when I saw the thick bags, like CVS had them too,
yeah,
I thought they were just special bags that were then recyclable. I didn't realize that we were trying to just give us a disposable bag. So I probably have messed up so many of my blue bins thinking that those were all of a sudden recyclable because they had some symbol on them that made them look recyclable. I don't know.
Because you don't don't read DNA Info's recycling coverage often enough.
You know I read DNA Info as much as I possibly can, but yes.
We have hammered home the plastic bag. In fact, my colleague Kelly Bauer and I went to a recycling facility, and we saw why the city of Chicago does not take plastic bags of any thickness in their program, because they clog the machinery like you wouldn't believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there are, and we've found this out in covering recycling, just because something has a recycling symbol on it. Yes, that means somewhere, somehow, it may be recyclable. That doesn't mean that any of the city's either public or private haulers or public or private facilities actually accept those materials. So, yeah, those plastic bags are recyclable, but you have to take them, you know, drop them off at Jewel or CVS.
Right.
And then they'll send them to, you know, the one facility that actually knows what to do with that material.
We have a text. Yeah, we have a text line from the 872 that says, if the city's so concerned, tell the stores to completely stop selling bags. So a all-out bag ban, forcing consumers to bring their own. I imagine that would be wholly unpopular because so many people, you know, would forget it, like I do every single time.
Right.
But I guess, you know, it's interesting because forget once, fine, I'll be carrying those cans of soup like in my pockets and stuff down the street, Macaulay Culkin dropping them all over the place. That would be a quick way to change behavior, but I don't think something that the city would have the teeth to do.
Well, I've thought about this a lot, and there's a couple of issues. One is that you think about the bags that some retailers provide, and I, for some reason, DSW specifically came to mind for me, and you think about the bags that they provide consumers. Those bags are kind of specifically designed to handle the merchandise that they sell. So the reusable bags that I tend to have at home tend to be the ones that I take to the grocery store. And they're kind of made of a size and a weight or material to handle groceries. But if you think about shoe boxes,
mm-hmm.
those are like a very kind of specific size, height. And those DSW bags are perfect for shoe boxes. You know, so as a consumer, am I going to have to, every time I walk outside, carry like five different types of reusable bags with me just in case I stop into a stationery store?
Just in case you have a random trip to DSW and need nine pairs of shoes, yeah.
Exactly. Which I don't even want to say how many pairs I bought the last time I went there.
Hey, Patty, we got an interesting question from the 815 that says, how will they tax these in self-checkouts? I imagine you don't quite know the answer. That might be something that they don't even know the answer for yet.
Well, if you do think about self-checkouts, a lot of stores do have a staff person who's kind of policing that area. So that is a great question. And I'm wondering if they'll have to have somebody there who will have to say, you used bags.
Yes. Hit the tax button there, yeah. Okay, so we'll have to wait for that, obviously. And then, so speaking of, you know, confusion or how this might work out, I imagine that a lot of small business owners have kind of expressed that confusion. First of all, not knowing that this was going to happen,
right,
first and foremost, and what they're going to do now, because don't they have to buy the bags from the city ahead of time? How does that work?
So, yeah, the issue with a lot of small business owners is that they were completely unaware that this ordinance even existed and that it applied to paper and that it was going to affect them. And one of the biggest issues they had was that they would have to inventory the bags that they currently have on hand before the tax going into effect and pay the tax in advance, which, you know, might not seem that big a deal, but, you know, some businesses might have 30,000 bags on hand.
Right.
And having to cut a check that they weren't expecting is a big deal for some of these businesses that run on very small, if any, profit margins to start with.
Especially in the winter months when after the holiday, now February 1st, which is for a lot of small businesses the
right.
worst month for purchasing.
It is.
So one question I have for you is how this tax, so it's 7 cents. And the interesting thing is kind of the breakdown of it, right? Because 2% goes back to helping businesses with the bag transition, but 5 cents of it goes straight to the city. Am I reading that correctly?
That's correct. So 5 cents of every 7 cents collected goes to the city, and then 2 cents the retailer gets to keep. And that has actually raised a couple of issues because the very thin, filmy plastic bags that retailers can now go back to using instead of those thick ones, they actually cost less than 2 cents. So some of these larger companies that use those bags, and I hate to keep on picking on companies like Jewel and Target, but those are the best examples that spring to mind, they might actually be making money on this.
Interesting.
So the bag costs them a penny. They're collecting 2 cents. The paper bags that a lot of boutiques use are much pricier. You know, they're fancier, they're specially designed, they've got logo and printing on them. Those can cost 20 to 30 cents.
Yeah.
So for them to collect the 2 cents, that's barely making a dent in what they're already spending. And so for them, it's really not a huge incentive for them to sort of be ticking off customers.
And not only that, Patty, this is a topic for another day. We can't even go into this right now, but the 5 cents that the city gets, I know a lot of advocates were saying, well, make that for recycling awareness and for ad campaigns. Nope, it just goes into the general coffers.
Right. That was a big issue that Jordan Parker brought up from the Bag Coalition. Kind of, you know, other cities, they have had this, who collect this tax, they've specifically earmarked those dollars to go toward either environmental education or maybe subsidizing rain barrels,
right,
or
something.
Composting for something to kind of spread the environmental message that people are supposed to be getting
right
with this tax.
Right. And that's, again, Patty, a conversation for another day. Patty Whetley from DNA Info covering a lot of the areas on the north side and a lot of recycling stuff too. Patty, always a pleasure to chat with you.
Thanks so much, John.
Plenty more coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch, including 5 steps to get your financial house in order here for the new year. That's coming up next on 720 WGN. The Wintrust Business Lunch wrapping up here, but not before a very important conversation to have. And I feel like a cold Saturday inside in January might be a good chance for you to get on the computer, get on an Excel file sheet, and look up your retirement savings and really take a few minutes or a few hours to make a plan for your getting your financial house in order. And Lori Berry, friend of the show from UBS, is joining us now. Lori, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, good afternoon, John.
And I think that is, you know, we talk during the week a lot about getting your financial house in order, but sometimes a good Saturday afternoon, it doesn't sound like the most fun activity, but if you're stuck inside, what a great day to kind of get some things in order.
It is. It's a perfect time to get organized. I would agree with you, for sure.
No one wants to go for a walk when it's 32 degrees. Okay, so it's about to be February. We're almost in the second month of the year, but we're still in that time when we're, you know, reaching goals, whether it's about our personal lifestyles or whatnot. But really, it still is a great chance to kind of hit refresh on your financial needs. And you've got a couple steps for us here at the beginning of the year to accomplish that.
Yes. It's really a smart time to start. January's almost through, and some people may be thinking, oh, I haven't started it yet. But we think of it really as goal setting for the year, not just a new financial resolution that you come up with, but really having a plan in place.
And so you kind of break it down. I mean, it sounds easy, but I imagine the first step, and you can correct me with your first step officially, but I guess it's having that conversation with whoever you need to, or just having it with yourself that, hey, it's time to get going.
Exactly. And most people, unfortunately, when making plans for the future, because it's uncertain, there's procrastination. So just having a conversation of let's sit down and follow some steps and put a plan in place is really important. And you want to make sure whoever you're planning with, you're on the same page.
Is it worry, too? If people don't feel like they're in the best spot, it's almost like you want to just keep on kicking that can down the road. And with any problem in life, that doesn't ever work out very well.
No. You need a plan in place. And, of course, Planning is difficult, and some people don't want to really look at where they stand today financially, mm-hmm. so they put off planning for the future. If they think, well, I'm not in the best position now, you know, why should the future be, you know, better? I need to really see where I'm at now. And some people they don't open their statements, or they just don't think in those terms. And thinking about the future can be daunting.
All right. So if I'm sitting down today, I'm in front of my computer, what is a few things that I can do really quickly, or even not really quickly, but at least get started on being aware of what's going on?
Well, the first thing, you almost don't even need your computer, so to speak. It's more of a conversation with your partner or whoever you're planning with. And it's the exact opposite of thinking quickly. As humans, we basically have two kind of systems for decision making, and one is autopilot. We think very quickly and, okay, what's my top goal? And our first step in the five-step goal discovery process is think deliberately. So by thinking deliberately, your thinking is more slowly, it's more conscious, it takes some effort. In other words, what do you really want to accomplish for yourself, your spouse, your family, and really think about what it is that's important to you.
Step two, after thinking deliberately?
Well, you want to identify the specific goals that you have, okay? So this is the crucial foundation for sound decision-making, is indicating, okay, which goals do I have? And we suggest clients look through 10 different categories of goals, but pick the ones that are most heartfelt for you. But don't just pick one. Dream a little. Pick your top two, three, maybe four goals that you want to accomplish.
And really quickly, let's get to step three. What would be next, Lori?
So when you're planning for your goals, you also have to think about the unexpected. So you may have all these great ideas of what you want to accomplish, but unfortunately, you want to plan for the unexpected, which could mean looking at your insurance coverage, looking at your estate plan. Do you have a will? Do you have beneficiaries in place? Is your cash reserve significant enough? And if it isn't, what are you going to do to sort of, you know, get that beefed up a little bit so if something does happen, you don't destroy the integrity of your financial plan?
Lori Berry, I got to apologize. We spent way too long talking about Chicago's bag tax, which everyone's talking about. So for steps four and five, where can people go to find more?
Planning for the unexpected, the fourth one is learn from others. A great way to improve your ability to predict of what you might value in the future is mm-hmm. what other people are doing. And then the last step is prioritize, right? Most people have limited resources and time, so you want to prioritize really clearly. Most important, sort of important, and not so important, and start on those most important goals first.
And if people are more curious and want to talk to you, how can they get in touch?
Sure. It's lori.berry@ubs.com.
People are upset about the bag tax, Lori. I'm so sorry. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure, Jen. Thanks for your time.
We'll wrap up the Wintrust Business Lunch after this.